This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing it and drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly. I am Connor McKnight. Happy holidays, White Sox fans. Starting at just $66, get a White Sox holiday pack redeemable for more than 50 games throughout the 2025 season. To learn more and to purchase, visit whitesox.com/holidaypacks. Got a couple of things to talk about here on the final White Sox Weekly of 2024. Next week, it'll be 2025. And yeah, we'll be talking about the same kind of stuff. That is kind of the nature of the baseball offseason. You know, there's no, at the year's end, you don't really turn the page so much. You're just kind of waiting on the next, you know, trade rumors and free agent rumors and whatnot. But I guess, you know, we'll do our best to kind of put a bookend on 2024 and look forward into 2025 in this show. We've been looking forward to doing, I've been looking forward to doing this one for a little while here with a few moves the White Sox have been making over the last couple of weeks. You know, the trade of Garrett Crochet, a couple of roster moves here and there, settling some things down as far as, you know, prospect rankings and whatnot. We kind of have, right now, the best look at a 40-man roster, or at the very least the pitching side of one, that we have had in some time. White Sox did make a move earlier this week, trading for a left-handed reliever, Cam Boozer, a guy that's an incredibly interesting story. Made his debut for the Red Sox last season at age 31. We'll tell you all about him here in a couple of minutes in case you've missed the news or hadn't read into the story, or maybe had just heard, boy, he's had a really difficult time getting back to the big leagues. Wonder what that's looked like. We've got it for you here. And we'll talk about how he kind of mixes into the bullpen and how Will Venable, White Sox new manager, might be able to take advantage of now three lefties ready for big league action and some pretty decent ones as well. And how Chris Getz may take advantage of that sudden depth on the White Sox roster as well. Got a couple of big moves even today. Corbin Burnes has reportedly signed a six-year deal with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Took less money to go to Phoenix, according to reports, than there was out there from the San Francisco Giants and Toronto Blue Jays. Guys like Bob Nightingale had been reporting that for a little while here. Important to note that, yeah, less money, but Burnes is from Arizona. There's less tax impact on some of that money in the first 2 years. There's an opt-out after the first two seasons for Corbin Burnes and the Diamondbacks, as we're learning this afternoon, and that's going to factor in quite a bit as well. So an AL East powerhouse, the Baltimore Orioles, who traded two guys, D.L. Hall and Joey Ortiz, to the Brewers last year, got one season out of Corbin Burnes, got bounced real quickly out of the playoffs, and now has to kind of remake themselves a bit. They've done some work in the offseason, no doubt about it, and I kind of figured the Orioles, like many, to be the big-time players for Garrett Crochet, but it was the Red Sox that made that move a couple of weeks ago and plucked the ace from the White Sox and gave a pretty decent pile of prospects back in return, guys that we've talked about quite a bit here over the last few weeks. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number on the show this afternoon. You want to talk White Sox, you want to talk baseball, we've got it here for you. And like I mentioned, for the last couple of weeks, I've been trying to, you know, getting us to set up kind of the pitching depth of the White Sox. And we're going to do it here in this show today. I think right now, even though the White Sox have brought in some really interesting bats in Kyle Teal and Braden Montgomery and Chase Meidroth to differing degrees, it is still very much the strength of the system on the pitching side. Guys like Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, some of the top arms in all of baseball in terms of prospect rankings. Noah Schultz may well be the top pitching prospect in all of baseball in just a couple of months when different outlets begin to re-rank their prospects. So it's pretty clear that while the White Sox really were very much, you know, finding, just on the pitching side of things, finding their way in 2024 and testing some things out, getting guys back from injury, getting a few guys some big league time, a couple of, you know, knocks around the league, a couple of starts that didn't go their way, some injuries that you had to deal with too with guys like Drew Thorpe. that side of the organization, the pitching side of the organization, I think came through 2024 and has some battle scars that will be, that will prove worthwhile, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. When you look at the starting rotation, we'll look through the top five, you know, projected guys as we see it right now, you can definitely look through the lessons learned for each dude and see some of the potential for a really good starting rotation down the line here. I'm not necessarily saying in 2025 that the White Sox starting five or that rotation depth, five through six, seven, and eight, is tops in baseball or even in the division, but certainly you can start to see the building blocks. Whereas on the offensive side of things, unfortunately, the White Sox in 2024 can't say very much more than we were lost and absolutely lost at times. And that's where the offensive, that's where the organization has begun to remake themselves in a huge way, obviously, with the trade of Garrett Crochet being focused on the position player side of things. You needed to get bats back. The White Sox did that. And now we're kind of taking a look at the pitching infrastructure for what it is. The trade last week was that, or this past week, I should say, just a couple of days before Christmas, brought in Cam Boeser, a left-hander who can really run it up there, about 96, 97 miles an hour or so. A left-handed three-pitch kind of guy, 95-mile-an-hour fastball, a cutter, against right-handers, goes about 88 miles an hour, and he's got the sweeper sitting about 82, 83-ish or so, and he'll use that mostly against lefties. So kind of a lefty with kind of a two-pitch guy against righties and a two-pitch guy against lefties, but can deal with both hands. It isn't necessarily handicapped. It certainly has better splits against lefties than righties, but isn't handicapped against the platoon advantage for right-handers. And I think that's something to keep in mind here as we talk about what the White Sox brought into the bullpen in Cam Boeser and what's already there. Boeser got his first career save against the White Sox back on June 9th, if you'll remember. The White Sox won the first two in that series against Boston at what was then Guaranteed Rate Field and is now Rate Field. That ended a 14-game skid, but in the 10th inning of game number three, the Red Sox got two in the top half of the inning, and in the bottom half, Cam Boeser got Andrew Vaughn, Paul DeYoung, and Danny Mendick to go 1-2-3 and end the ball game. Red Sox won it 6-4. That's the first time, well, I should say the second time, that White Sox fans in person got a chance to see new left-hander Cam Boeser in an actual live ball game. I mentioned, you know, kind of the journey that Boeser has been on. And I guess before we do that, probably worth saying what the White Sox gave up in this trade. Yoiker Fajardo, pardon, it's a tough one for me to say. A lot of letters, a lot of fun ones. Yoiker Fajardo, an 18-year-old right-hander, was dealt to the Boston Red Sox in this trade. And Corey Jolks, an outfielder who got off to a real good start with the White Sox when he was brought up in the middle of the season last year, but struggled to maintain that run offensively a little bit later on, was designated for assignment. You could kind of see the writing on the wall for Corey Jolks. Great guy. I hope he catches on somewhere soon and gets back in the big leagues. But with the signings of guys like Austin Slater and Mike Tauchman, the major league outfield spots began to shrink pretty quickly here, and the White Sox needed to make some room. Boeser's 32 years old. He won the Tony Conigliaro Award from the Boston Red Sox last year. He was 2-3 with a .338 earned run average, gave up 16 earnings in 14 and two-thirds, got a save against the White Sox, six holds, 43 strikeouts in 43 appearances. And remember, those 42 and two-thirds innings, 43 strikeouts, kept the walks down. Some decent stuff. He was the oldest Red Sox player to debut since 1947. Tommy Fine was the name of that guy who debuted a little bit older than Boeser was at the time. And it's a wild story. Zach Buchanan in The Athletic wrote a little bit, this is 2 years ago, but Buchanan was covering some of the minor leagues and found the interesting story that is Cam Boeser, and a guy that we'll talk to, once we get down to spring training and whatnot, about his road back. So I'm going to read you a couple of things, some pull quotes, I guess, from the piece Buchanan wrote in The Athletic in 2018. He was a Twins minor leaguer for a long time, never got past A ball, you know, left-handed guy that had gotten hit around a ton, and it had a bunch of injuries pop up for him. So because of that, he dropped out of baseball. He left. He joined a carpenters union in Seattle and was working construction in Northwest Washington. He was putting up ceilings. Got a little tired of that, it sounds like, and started giving baseball lessons. And one day, Buchanan writes, just for the heck of it, Booster stepped back onto the mound and got to throwing again. He threw 96 miles an hour. His friends who were at the training session or just, you know, in the area kind of lost their minds, went all over the place. And he started working with a trainer. That turned into a getting an inning in semi-pro ball. That turned into a video on Twitter. And then got a contract with the Chicago Dogs just up the way in the Independent American Association. He was pitching just not too far from Wrigley Field with the Chicago Dogs for a year. Then got his release in 2017 from the Minnesota Twins, heading into 2018, becoming a minor league free agent. Check out the path that Booster has been on. His sophomore year of high school, he broke his femur while playing football and then had to have knee surgery. His senior year of high school, he fractured a vertebrae during what Buchanan writes was an overzealous session in the weight room. Then he had Tommy John surgery his freshman year of college. That procedure did not go as well as some do. Then had an elbow scope in his second year of pro ball. And in his third year of pro ball, he tore his labrum, which required another surgery. In 2015, December, he was rehabbing at the Twins' spring training facility and was hit by a car. Buchanan writes he was on his bicycle when a motorist ran a stop sign and plowed right into him. I rolled onto his hood, broke his windshield, slid off, slid into traffic, Booster said. Wound up with a broken sacrum, which Buchanan, it's a bone near the base of your spine, which does not sound like a fun thing to break at all. More fractured than any bone, Buchanan writes, was Booster's psyche. And here's the quote from Cam. He says, I was already going through some stuff mentally, which you could understand after all the injuries before the car accident. I was young. I was throwing a pity party, he said. I was young and naive. And in between injuries, he was in 2019, MLB removed the cannabis from its banned substance list. And Booster had been enjoying some good results in between injuries, using that to help with some of the pain, which, you know, obviously it's well, that's a longer and more political conversation. But it's something that Major League Baseball has been dealing with in terms of their own policies for a little while here. And I think it's worth noting when, you know, you see a positive test for marijuana for a guy like Booster in, what was it, 2015, and a suspension, and then that policy subsequently being removed from MLB's list of banned substances in 2019. I think it's probably worth bringing up in terms of context. Anyway, in February of 2022, and this is part of the weird story of the Cam Booster saga, he was pitching an independent ball for, I believe, 2 years and, you know, clocking 96 and putting up ERAs under two and all kinds of nasty stuff as kind of the setup guy for the Chicago Dogs. But the Twins organization, for whatever reason, Buchanan and others, at least I haven't seen it enumerated in any spot, the Twins hadn't released him from their contractual control. He's still a part of the Twins and unable to sign anywhere else in February of 2002. And Buchanan writes that that month, he cold called a member of the Twins front office, who Cam chose not to name, and that person finally got the ball rolling in the front office. Buchanan writes he was granted his release. The Diamondbacks called. I guess the story goes that Booster was in the weight room, you know, kind of getting started on a particular set. And as he started the set, he got a text from his agent saying, congratulations, you've been released by the Minnesota Twins, thus giving him his minor league free agency. And before he could finish the set on the squat rack, he was already agreeing to a deal with the Diamondbacks, and the minor league journey continued. He goes to the Red Sox and now a member of the White Sox. And I think we're going to see a lot of Booster as a setup man, or perhaps, you know, kind of a late inning leverage guy. I think it'll be really interesting to see over the course of, you know, the next month, 2 months, whether it's SoxFest Live coming up here at the end of January or in spring training, getting to talk to Will Venable a little bit more about how he plans to use the bullpen, whether it's going to be, you know, kind of a traditional 7-8-9 or finding some leverage spots, attacking some pockets, all that other kind of stuff. I'm really interested in seeing, you know, his vision for how the White Sox are going to use some of these young, talented, and developing arms, and also the veterans like Boozer, although 1 year of service time in the bigs, and how they're going to blend those together. There's, you know, a lot to like about what's there for this guy. And when you see, or I guess when you kind of take a look at what the White Sox are looking to accomplish with a roster move like this, it's a fairly clear issue. This is a guy who's got a lot of strikeout possibility. This is a guy who's got a lot of leverage work in front of him, I would imagine. And while the Red Sox are trying to kind of win now, this is a player that was maybe on the fringe of their roster, and the White Sox were looking to alleviate a roster issue for the Red Sox and bring in some more talent behind it. It is absolutely, I mean, listen, a lefty reliever who can put up some strikeout numbers and keep the ball in the ballpark, that's the kind of dude that teams are going to come calling about come June or July, and the White Sox are all about acquiring players that fit that category at this point in the offseason. More about the state of the White Sox pitching and how Boozer fits into some of the leverage ladder, at least on the left-handed side for the White Sox, when we come back. We'll take some phone calls, too, 312-332-3776. We'll head out to the phone lines when we come back as well. It is White Sox Weekly, the last of 2024, right here on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Sox fans, now is your chance to meet with new White Sox manager Will Venable. Enter the Meet the Manager sweepstakes for your chance to win an exclusive meet and greet on January 23rd. To learn more and to enter, visit whitesox.com/meet the manager. Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Been talking about the addition, the trade for left-handed reliever Cam Boozer, and how that's going to fit into the bullpen with everybody else, play nicely, and hopefully get a whole lot of hitters out. A note about the White Sox front office coming up here in just a second as well, and we'll talk about kind of the depth chart for pitchers, for pitching, I guess, throughout the White Sox organization before we wrap up our final show of 2024. But more than anything else, as you know, this is your show, 312-332-3776. That's the number, and we head out to the phone lines right now to hear from our guy, Ron, on the South Side. What's up, Ron? Good to talk to you.
Hey, happy holidays to you, Connor. Man, this is almost probably the best time to talk baseball. So I want to ask you, what do you think are the possibilities of Chase Meredith and the shortstop, Colson Montgomery, making the team, they break. So, and then also the possibility of the person I'm really looking forward to see is Brayden Montgomery.
Sure.
And speaking of Brayden Montgomery, the most important thing right now, I think, for this organization is player development. I'm a little disappointed with Byron Ramos, Oscar Colos. So, you can get players, but it's so important, to have people in place to develop it. So I really did like the trade. And so I just want to, maybe you can answer that question for me about Meredith and Colson Montgomery.
Absolutely,
I really like,
Ron,
to kind of see them coming out. Okay. And thank you as always, Colin. Appreciate
Anytime.
It.
Anytime. You know it. Happy holidays, Ron. Great to hear from you. Yeah, let's get into that a little bit here. We talked a bunch about each of the prospects the White Sox acquired for Garrett Crochet a couple of weeks ago. You can download the ESPN Chicago app, every single White Sox Weekly show, available at your leisure and for your pleasure right there on the app. And so if you want to go back and get a deeper rundown on each one of those guys, feel free to go do it. I would also highly endorse some of the work and writing that White Sox beat reporters have put out on some of this stuff, and some of the work boys over at FutureSox.net have done getting really into each one. One of the things I absolutely love about our conversations here on White Sox Weekly is that we get to do it every week and talk about anything we want regarding the White Sox. We're only an hour during the off season, though, and there's only so much we can really get into on any given show. So that's where those other guys come in, and they do one heck of a job. What I'll say about Colson Montgomery and Chase Mydroth, the two guys that Ron asked for, or asked about, rather, at the start of the phone call, was that I think they've got a pretty good chance of making the roster to open the season. I think Mydroth has a better chance. I talked to somebody in the White Sox organization that believes that Mydroth has the... And listen, it's December 28th and not even in the same calendar year as we'll be breaking for camp. So, yes, this is absolutely premature. But given the hit tool that Mydroth has, his proximity to the big leagues, played a full year at AAA last season, I would not be surprised one bit. In fact, I'd probably bet on it. I'd probably bet on it if I could. For Chase Mydroth to be the opening day second baseman at this point, right? I think he's your odds-on favorite, and I think it's more likely than not. Colson Montgomery could get himself an opening day assignment, but you know the White Sox do have the ability to keep him in the minors to start the year a month, month and a half or so. I think there's 40-something days before Montgomery's got to be up in order for the White Sox to give him a good run at finishing in Rookie of the Year voting, which would then bring them back a subsequent draft pick. That was part of the new CBA that we got put up just a couple of years ago. You get a rookie that puts up solid numbers and gets X amount of playing time. It's not super important what the numbers are right now or what the total at-bats are. But we'll get into it, I think, when we get closer and closer to spring training. And that's something that should be on their mind. They've got a real good belief in Colson Montgomery, despite the fact that last year wasn't the year that everybody wanted him to have. It is the opinion of many that he remains a top prospect in the game, especially if he can stay at shortstop at 6'3", 225. That's his listed size and weight. But I think there's an opportunity there. Braden Montgomery's assignment, I mentioned this, I think, in the show 2 weeks ago. When we get to camp, there's going to be all kinds of conversations about position battles and who's going to make the roster and who's going to be that 26th guy and what kind of catching assignments you're going to see for guys like Corey Lee and Kyle Teal and Matt Theis and Edgar Caro. What kind of balance are you going to find there between those top four catchers? Is one of the young rookies going to break camp with the team? All those are going to be great and fun to follow. The undercard fight, right? The next big headline that I'm really interested in when we get to camp is seeing what level Braden Montgomery is going to get assigned to. It's entirely possible that he gets a high A assignment at Winston-Salem out the gate because of how much he played in the SEC at college, leading up to the ankle injury that sidelined him for all of last season. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he moves quickly. There are a lot who evaluate prospects and see a lot of guys who evaluate prospects and see Braden Montgomery, as the guy who make or break is a really, it's just an easy and simple way and probably oversimplified way of kind of defining this conversation a little bit, but I'll use it here just to kind of, jump for clickbait. Braden Montgomery might be the guy that can make or break the trade of Garrett Crochet. He's got a ton of power. He is exceptionally athletic. He has got an absolute cannon from right field. The guy was pitching and closing for Stanford for 2 years in his collegiate career. Pretty good fastball slider combination, though he's going to be a straight hitter here. He is a switch hitter, though there are some questions as to whether or not staying as a right-handed hitter is going to be something in his long-term future. But that's, even still premature to talk about. He is definitely a guy that can move quick through the season and could be, crushing it at Double A by the end of the year with a Triple A assignment out of the gate in 2026 and, maybe a debut in that season as well. For what all that's worth, MLB Pipeline, who we use as just kind of a gut check on prospects and stuff because it's accessible to everybody regardless of whether you're shelling out money for it or not. Not that you shouldn't if you're into it. But 2027 is the estimated time of arrival, the ETA for Braden Montgomery on that MLB pipeline. I think that could be, if the White Sox got this right and Braden Montgomery as healthy as he can be, that could be a little conservative, I think. And it's weird. It feels good. But it is weird to regard a White Sox hitting prospect like this at that point, and that is why the trade itself, the Crochet trade, and getting Braden Montgomery as well as the three other guys the White Sox got back, is as highly regarded as the industry has it right now. We'll jump back into the pitching side of things when we come back. Got to hit a break. But with the trade of Cam Buescher earlier this week, that means that Will Venable's got some guys he can trust toward the back end of that bullpen. At least that's the hope. That's the expectation. And I want to talk a bit about the guys who are going to start games, about the depth at AAA, about what kinds and names of pitchers the White Sox are going to turn to here in 2025, with the understanding that there might be one or two additions before we get to spring training that might be of interest. We'll talk about all that when we come back on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000.
White Sox Weekly with Connor McKnight.
On the home of the White Sox.
ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. I'm Connor McKnight, 312-332-3776. That's the number here on the show this afternoon. Want to get back to the pitching side of things, although Ron on the South Side, who called earlier in the show and got us talking about some of the young hitting prospects in the White Sox organization, reminded me to bring this note up as well. Phil Nevin is reportedly joining the White Sox as a special assistant to the general manager. Bob Nightingale reported that news late yesterday, I believe it was, you know, kind of trickling out in different spots. Nightingale writes, here's the tweet Nightingale had about Phil Nevin joining the White Sox. The Chicago White Sox made a shrewd move as they hired former Angels manager Phil Nevin as a special assistant in their player development department. He'll be involved in a number of player development roles, including amateur scouting for the 2025 draft. Mike Shirley and his crew have been doing a pretty good job, I think, of the amateur draft here, especially in the early rounds, taking guys like Noah Schultz and Colson Montgomery, and, you know, the names go on and on. Ron Hagen Smith here, too. Caleb Bonimer, a name that's going to be, I think, rising through the ranks over the next 6-8 months, something like that. Anyway, what's interesting here is that Nevin was reportedly a finalist for the manager's job that went to Will Venable, first-year manager Will Venable, who'll be skippering the team in 2025. Nevin's got, you know, a long-time run as a minor league manager and a major league manager, taking over as interim for Joe Maddon when he was let go by the Angels a couple of years back. Nevin does have his hands in player development in the past. As a minor league manager, you are, you know, intricately involved in player development. And Ron, who called the show earlier, you know, kind of said that the most important thing that he's looking for, or what he was disappointed by a little bit last year, was some of the player development that didn't happen on the hitting side for the White Sox. He mentioned specifically Brian Ramos, who I think is going to get some good run in 2025, almost assuredly getting a full-time spot or a full-time allotment of plate appearances in the majors. Whether that's going to be, you know, at third or at first or at second or as a DH or potentially playing some outfield, I have no idea. But he's going to get his cuts regardless of what position he's playing. And I think we'll see more from that player development side of things. What is now left to the White Sox, or what is, I suppose, better put next for the White Sox, is making sure, making absolutely sure that these, you know, the hitter acquisitions, your Colson, your Braden Montgomery, Kyle Teal, Chase Mydroth, and the rest of the bats that are already in the system develop better than they have developed bats over the last 4 or 5 years. That's not to say that there haven't been wins in the White Sox player development system. However, there have been some notable bats that just kind of quieted after a time. In fact, you know, one of the notes we saw in the last couple of days is that Eloy Jimenez, former White Sox outfielder and designated hitter, who was dealt to the Baltimore Orioles for Trey Mago just before the deadline last year, signed a minor league deal with the Rays. He'll get a $2 million bonus if he makes the roster, which I would imagine he will. The Rays are known for making the most out of, I don't know, troubled assets in terms of skill sets. And Eloy's also going to get a $2 million bonus if he gets to 500 plate appearances. I root for Eloy Jimenez. I always liked watching him hit when he was on, like just about every other hitter when it's off. It's tough to watch, especially with the strikeouts and the ground balls, despite the exit velocities just turning into double plays. It was tough, you know, for a little while there at the end for Eloy Jimenez, but I'm rooting for him. I hope there's a comeback there. There's a heck of a lot of power and a fun player to watch when he's clicking right. White Sox fans saw that for longer than I think some would admit, and yet the difficulty there was the injuries, a lack of fly ball, a lack of slugging percentage, all that kind of stuff, which we've, you know, kind of talked about here for years at this point, and now the White Sox turning the page. It's not as though there are other teams necessarily counting on, or the Rays counting on that player. There's development left, I guess, to say, and that's something that the White Sox want to, you know, make sure is taken care of here over the next many, many years, is that they are developing their players for the most part as best as possibly can be developed. So they're getting the best out of those young players for the first 6 years until they hit free agency, you know, as is kind of the winning blueprint for so many teams. You've got to make the most out of players when they're young so that the veteran numbers, you know, the veteran big-time salaries that you bring in have a lot of support in the meanwhile, and you've got the ability to bring in those numbers one way or another, or in a lot of different instances, I suppose. The other spot, too, or the other topic here that I wanted to get into here as we kind of roll through the show, our last one of 2024, was just kind of the pitching depth chart. And Cam Buser got us thinking about it and talking about it some, the trade of a left-handed reliever. It means that the White Sox now have three relievers, major league tested, major league ready relievers, all from the left side in Cam Buser and Frazier Ellard and Jared Schuster. And as James Fegan of SoxMachine.com reported, and we've checked out as well, each one has at least one option left, Buser, Ellard, and Schuster. And I think, and this is something I've talked about, you know, since the White Sox made the move in the front office to Chris Getz and kind of reshaping their vision here as they're also rebuilding, one of, if not the most important assets you can have when building out a bullpen is to make sure that you've got, oh, I don't know, 8, 9, or 10 guys available to you with options that you are, you know, able to shuttle back and forth, major league reliable type guys, or at the very least, if they're not already tested in the bigs, guys that you are ready to test in the bigs. And I think Buser and Ellard and Schuster all fit that note. Jared Schuster is left-handed, but the way the White Sox have used him in 2024 as more of like an opener bulk guy, kind of he qualifies a little differently. I don't think of him as you know, your lefty one-inning guy or, you know, in years past, a loogie, a lefty one-out guy, which don't exist anymore because of the three-batter minimum. But I think of him a little bit differently. So when it comes to setting up the bullpen now, I'm just going to go through guys on the 40-man roster with a little bit on a handful of dudes and talk a little bit about the options that they're going to have in the starting rotation or in the bullpen and where we'll likely see some changes and some development asks, right? Some situations where maybe a guy gets sent to AAA Charlotte who saw some time at the major league level last year and needs to make that push, whether it be as a starter or a reliever. You know, the clock's ticking on everybody at some point, and there are a few names in this system for whom the clock is ticking just a little bit louder. Your starting rotation, at least to me and to a lot of others, looks a lot like Jonathan Cannon, Davis Martin, Drew Thorpe, Bryce Wilson, and Sean Burke. Those are the five names that I think are most likely to be in that rotation come the first day of the year, come the first day of the season. Whether Cannon gets the opening day start or not, I don't know, but I've heard from some who are employed by the White Sox and others who kind of, you know, kick this stuff around in different blogs and websites and podcasts and shows. To me, I kind of Cannon does look like that guy to take an opening day start. He can get deep into ball games. He's got a lot of control and command, and looking for more strikeouts in 2025 will be the next ask for Jonathan Cannon. Davis Martin fits. He is in that rotation. He is a guy ready to make that next step, and I think it's a guy that teams will be calling about. Thorpe is the interesting one here. Thorpe pitched well in his first couple of starts before very clearly dealing with the symptoms of bone spur in his elbow that he eventually got worked on this offseason, surgery to fix that issue. Timeline lines up for him being ready for the start of spring training and thus for the start of the major league season. If there were setbacks, if there was tenderness or what have you, you know the White Sox are going to play this as conservatively as they can and do right by Drew Thorpe. He is absolutely a pitcher that they expect a lot out of in his major league career, and there's no reason to rush that for opening day. And if that's the change to this starting five, I think you know a lot would understand and agree with playing conservatively there. Bryce Wilson, I think, will start the year in the rotation. At least that's my expectation. It's possible that that's not the case, but I think it's there. I think that's why he signs a deal with the White Sox. He's said as much in his opening press conference that there are good starting rotation opportunities for him in Chicago. I was as impressed by Sean Burke in just a little bit of major league action toward the end of last season as I was impressed by anybody last year. He brought it. He was not afraid to go up in the strike zone with 96, 97. He was not afraid to snap off either one of those good breaking balls, the curve or the slider. I was blown away with how good Sean Burke was in those last couple of starts, considering the injuries that he'd had to come back from, the shoulder issues and all that other stuff. I don't know what the ceiling is for Sean Burke. I don't know that those last couple of starts changed where many see him long term, you know, kind of a mid-rotation guy at his peak. But that stuff looked a lot better than I expected for, you know, kind of quote-unquote your mid-rotation kind of prospect or ceiling prospect. That was good stuff. Kai Bush and Jairo Iriarte are kind of that major league depth or minor league depth. I think Bush made starts, and you saw him and that velocity kind of falter toward the end of the year or want some at the end of the year, and you could see how that affected him quite a bit. He's a guy that pitches with some decent command, and when he misses, I think he was toward the middle of the zone a little much, and with lower velocities, that's going to come bite you some. Jairo Iriarte is an interesting one to me in that I think the White Sox very clearly see him as a starting pitching prospect. Many see him as a reliever guy, at a good reliever, if he can't stay in that rotation. And it may well be that AAA is the right assignment for him at the start of the year, knowing that you can get a lot of starts and figure out, you know, maybe make that decision just a little bit early for the sake of Iriarte's development and your own understanding of what you've got on the roster and make that move. There are others that fit that prescription as well in guys like Nick Nastrini and Shane Smith, Wickelman Gonzalez, the right hand of the White Sox got from the Red Sox in the Garrett Crochet trade, and Jake Eater, and other bullpen names we'll talk about when we come back, plus maybe even some surprises. Who knows? Oh, and we'll sneak a phone call in on the other side, too. We'll go to Mark in South Bend leading off the final segment of the show here when we come back on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, enter the Sox Fest sweepstakes for your chance to win two tickets to Sox Fest Live at Remova, presented by Rate, Garrett Beggar's Pizza, Blue Moon, and Wintrust Financial Corporation. Celebrate the start of the season alongside current and former White Sox players and coaches with live music, entertainment, and more. To enter, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestSweeps. White Sox pre- and post-game hosts will be there as well. I'm very excited about it. Looking forward to Sox Fest Live at Remova on the 24th and 25th of January this year. Come on out. Have a great time. WhiteSox.com/SoxFestSweeps. Heading out to the phone lines right now before we get to the end of the show in South Bend. It is Mark here on White Sox Weekly. What's up, Mark?
Hey, Connor, I want to wish you, I hope you had a very Merry Christmas and wish you to have a very happy and safe New Year.
Well, thanks, Mark. Same to you, my man.
Good. The question I got is about Nolan Arenado, and I take it there hasn't been a deal yet made with St. Louis with anyone, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, my question is, I believe his existing contract has 3 years for $87 million. He's got a no-clause trade, and I think St. Louis was trying to work out a trade where he invoked his no-clause trade. But I think that being at Chicago's third-largest market, he might consider a trade to the White Sox, and I would think about Nolan Arenado at third base, a good glove man, and a guy who can pop 20 home runs out of that launching pad at guaranteed rate field or whatever they call it now and hit about 12 or 15 on the road, you would have a very good, solid third baseman. I know it's kind of towards the end of his career in that, but $87 million to absorb for 3 years, I think might be worthwhile.
All right, I appreciate you. I'll tell you what, Mark. That's not going to happen. And let's just correct a couple of things real quick. It is a full no-trade clause for Nolan Arenado. He has 2 years of control left at $59 million, 32 in this coming season and 27 in the year 2026. Arenado, I would imagine, has no interest in playing for a rebuilding team. And I would imagine that the White Sox have very little interest in giving up future assets for a player toward the back end of their career. Further, the White Sox have Brian Ramos, Miguel Vargas, Colson Montgomery, and a whole bunch of other guys that they'd like to see play third base, or at least have the opportunity to play third base. Chase Mydroth, another name probably we're throwing in there, over a veteran in Nolan Arenado. Now, Mark, where I don't argue with you, where I completely understand where you're coming from, some, you know, veteran leadership, a known guy, a dude, right, an MLB-er on that roster to help some of the youngsters out as they go through 2025, I'm all about it. The White Sox have some of those dudes in signing Mike Tauchman, just to mention a few, on the position player side that I think should help on some of the off-the-field issues, some of the in-the-clubhouse kind of situations that you want to see. I love Nolan Arenado. I think watching him play third base defensively over the last couple of years has been breathtaking. I've said it a couple of times on broadcasts and play-by-play. My favorite thing, my favorite highlight in the game of baseball is the awesome play at third going to the line. Like, that's just, I don't know why, aesthetically, that is just it for me. And watching Arenado do it over the last 10, 12 years has been absolutely breathtaking. But I don't know that that's in the cards. In fact, I know it's not in the cards for the White Sox. Although the idea of trading for a player with a big contract, taking that money, since the White Sox don't have a lot of committed payroll space in 2025, they could beef up that money, make that trade, take all the cash, maybe get some prospect back. I'm not saying for Arenado it would work. In fact, it wouldn't at all. But you might be able to see them work a move, something like that, at the deadline. Maybe take a contract off some team's hands for a player that you're looking to move as well, which might net you better prospects in return. That's what it's all about for the White Sox, in fact. Quickly here, and appreciate the phone calls, but it did kind of run us out of a little bit of time here to talk some of the bullpen names the White Sox are messing with and getting close to in camp. I do think, as we were talking about some of the pitching depth, there are 23 pitchers on the 40-man roster, and we went through the starting rotation options. There are guys that are in the middle here, some tweeners, guys that might be bullpen, might be long guys, might be starters in AAA, or maybe even get some starts in the bigs, and that's Nick Nastrini, Shane Smith, the Rule 5 pick from the Milwaukee Brewers, Wickelman Gonzalez, who I would imagine is minor league bound, but maybe major league ready at some point and in some role, and Jake Eater. Gonzalez came over to the White Sox in the deal for Garrett Crochet. Eater came over to the deal for Jake Berger 2 seasons ago. Berger now signing with the Rangers. And Jesse Schultens is on the roster still. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery, and it may not be that there's a roster spot for him. He's definitely on the bubble, as unfortunate as that is for a guy coming back from injury. The rest of the bullpen, Prelander, Baroa, Cam Booser, the guy they just traded for, Frazier Ellard, Justin Anderson, those are your kind of late leverage guys. Steven Wilson, Gus Varland, Jordan Leisure, Penn Murphy, Ron Marinaccio, and Juan Carella fill out the 40-man roster. Carella was placed on the 40-man roster to avoid Rule 5 draft implications. I would expect minor league time for sure for Carella, but maybe the bigs later on in the season. With the music playing, I'll just wrap it up like this. There's some depth here now there's some ability for the White Sox to go into the minors and bring guys up that have tasted the bigs before and have some prospect pedigree too. And that's a much better spot than the White Sox were at toward the end of 2000 and, well, toward the middle of 2024, that's for sure. Big thanks to Jack McGrath, our producer here on White Sox Weekly. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Have a safe and wonderful New Year's, and we'll talk to you in 2025 right here on ESPN 1000.